everybody. This is Gretchen Pisano, along with Michael Trotter, Renee Siebert, and Chris Brandt. Can you guys say hello so we know we're all here?
Hello.
Hello.
This is the Coach the Coach Practicum 3 Class 4 demo recording for the Martha Beck Life Coach Training. Welcome, everybody. In this class, we are taking a panel approach, and we thought it would be useful to talk through Square 2 and Square 3, how they are unique, what differentiates them from each other, what that threshold looks like, and some of the techniques that are really useful in Square 3 coaching, which is Hero's Journey. And so we're going to start with some questions for the panel, and we'll work through those. And then at the back end of our recording, we'll talk a little bit about little mini case studies of actual client work we've done with three tools, specifically the three B's, Turtle Steps, and Find the Feeling. So welcome, everybody, and let's get started. So, Chris, we're going to start with you. And our first question for the panel is, what does Square 3 look like in a client, and how is it different than Square 2?
Well, the experience that I've had with clients says that Square 2 was all about, you know, obviously everyone knows the model and dreaming and scheming and all that, but Square 3 differs in the way that they start meeting up with resistance, adversity, and there's a growing sense of frustration and fear that things aren't going to work out the way they thought. That's what typically happens. It's where there's a risk that they're going to go back in almost into square one. So what happens often is, you know, here's an example. I had a client who really was, we spent a lot of time in square two talking about her love of healthy living and nutrition and green living and, you know, whole foods and all those sorts of things. And then she decided she wanted to sign up for a program to become a nutritionist. And as she started her courses, she realized she couldn't stand it. She couldn't stand the homework. She couldn't stand the instructors. Everything about it started to feel wrong. And she really struggled with, well, what the heck have I done? And what am I going to do now? This isn't going to work. I want to stop and just forget it. And it was almost like a willingness to drop the dream completely rather than make minor adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so when you that's a great description, I think, of what it looks like to cross over from square two to square three, and then what a setback can look like in that. And so when she came to you with that kind of what have I done, mm-hmm. Can you give us an example, sort of a sense of what your first couple of questions were like for her to explore that?
Well, a couple of my questions were related to the program that she had enrolled in specifically, like the instructor, like the classes. I really wanted to dig down into, so what's so bad about that? You know, going back to a question that people learned in the training much earlier on than CTC3. It's a form of the wise, right? So I wanted to know, What is it about the program? Is it, you know, because she was making these sort of sweeping generalizations, or that's what they felt like to me. And so I asked, tell me about the program. Well, my instructor gives us a lot of homework that's vague and I don't understand it. Okay. And then we would dig a little further into that. Or I'd ask, what's wrong with this particular class besides the homework, if anything else? And she'd say, well, it's on a Monday night. Monday's typically a really big day at work, and I'm just struggling to keep up. And we started to surface in a lot of different ways that this pursuing this dream meant a lot of additional work or additional time and focus in her day that, you know, when the reality of that struck compared to dreaming about it, felt like, oh, I don't know if this is really worth it. It was less about wanting to drop the entire dream and more about, oh, wait, there are probably some more adjustments that need to be made in my day or in my week or in my life in order to accommodate the steps towards this goal.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's common that the thinking about the dream feels a lot better than the beginning of the doing in Hero's Journey?
I think that's a really good way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, this is harder than I thought it would be, and that's okay, is, you know, a motto for a reason. And I'm paraphrasing probably, but I think the reality, when reality sets in, there's this disillusionment that starts to happen. And it's not always big and grand and final and epic. It's sometimes it's just, oh, wait. And as a coach, I see my job as just helping them really look at those epic, grandiose, or big statements, or their inclination to lean that way, and to just help them dial back the energy, the fear, the emotion that they're associating with the fact that it's Monday night at 9:30 and I'm still doing homework and my kids are crying and I don't really love my professor and this is going to take way too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So balancing the emotions with what's really underneath that and how can we help you tweak it.
And it sounds like you did a good job of helping her take apart the epic thought. I really like that idea, the epic thought. I sometimes think about them as compound thoughts when they get just all mashed up together and then it's one big ball of overwhelm. So it sounds like you did a good job of helping her kind of pull it apart and take a look at each piece so she could truly decide whether she had actually sort of started operationalizing a dream that she wanted to go back and tinker with, or whether it's actually okay to stick with the path but maybe need to fine-tune the approach.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, great explanation and answer. Michael, we wanted to give the panel, a second person on the panel, an opportunity to weigh in with any additional thoughts, because sometimes as the listener, things occur to you that don't when you're the speaker. So what would you add to what Chris has shared?
The thing with the big difference between square two and three that I see with almost all of my clients is the concept of space and time that shows up in square three. And when you're in square two, it's like time doesn't really matter. Space doesn't really matter. You can be as, you know, that whole there are no rules. And then stuff gets real when you step into square three. And a lot of the times, the folks I work with, they have an expectation that, yeah, it's going to be hard, but I'm going to have this thing by, like, they're darn sure they should have had it already. And sometimes a lot of the work I'll have to do around that is loosening up them and their expectation of when something is supposed to be done by, and that it may take a little longer than they had expected, or sometimes a lot less time than they expected. I would say is one of the biggest things. And I think a part of that, and this plays off of what I heard Chris say, was that they have a want that they start moving towards in square three, and then that want, that thing they wanted to create, sometimes isn't exactly like what they thought they wanted when it was back in square two. But that doesn't mean they need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Often I find that, okay, I've reached the goal. For myself, I wanted to create a storytelling workshop. And so I created a storytelling workshop, and I was all excited, and I worked towards it, and then I made it happen. And it wasn't exactly what I wanted it to be. And there were times where I would do things like say, I'm never going to do that again. That wasn't what I wanted. But I've learned that there actually were things in what I created that I did want. And so it's about separating out the parts of that square three experience that didn't quite fulfill me or didn't work, and keeping the ones that did and building upon that. And in that, I'm still in square three, just improving on the parts that I found that really did work and that I did enjoy, and that were what I hope my square four is going to feel like. Does that make sense? I'm kind of all over a little bit.
No, you're not. Actually, it makes total sense. I think
tons of sense, yeah.
Yeah, I think your first point about the concept of space and time getting real in square three is so insightful, because when you think about the tools that we've been practicing in CTC3 up till now, the dream analysis, seven-leap boots, ideal day, and even metaphor, all of those tools take place in a world free of limitations, right?
Yeah.
Free of structure, free of time, elements of it. So even our tools in Square 2 are really designed to liberate from that, any constraints implied by that. And you're exactly right that when they do start to move into Square 3, all of a sudden it does become real. And without coaching, it can become so instantly constraining that it halts progress or sends them running.
Yeah. And it's funny because we call that, Square 3 is called the Hero Saga. And if you look at the Hero Saga from, you know, where it was named from, based on story, there's always that part when the hero starts to get on the journey and they want to turn around and run away because it gets real, you know? So if they experience that feeling of wanting to turn and run, they're probably in the perfect space, exactly what the saga is. And I always tell them that story about the hero saga and that refusal of that call to adventure, because it's been walked by anybody who's walked any path worth walking before. So they're not alone in that. And sometimes they take solace in that.
Yeah, yeah. That is great. I love it. Great insights. And I also think it's true. I mean, speaking for myself, Michael, I would say that I've had many hero journeys, small narratives of things I thought I was going to create that were going to end up a certain way that didn't turn out that way at all, but it actually ended up bringing completely different benefits. So I think it's very much about the recognizing each part of that journey as the learning experience and not the outcome you think you're going for.
Yeah. If not that's this, then something better is often what I plant in their heads. You know, because it's often not going to be what you thought originally.
Yeah, say that again, Michael.
If not this, then something better.
Mm-hmm.
And
great
trusting
mantra.
That, you know, whatever it is, the universe, whatever you want to call it, you've got these ideas. They feel like your North Star, and you're moving toward them. And it just may be that if it's not this thing that you think, there's something better that you're not yet able to see because you haven't stepped far enough down the path. So step down that path, have a few bruises, try a few things, and it will be something greater if you continue on that journey, all leading you to your best interest.
Yep. Great. I love that. That mantra's going up on my wall. If not, there's something better. I love it. So this is a great segue into our next question, which is come up earlier in our Coach the Coaches as we talk about how do you know when to coach towards action versus something else? And Renee, I thought we'd start with you kind of to weigh in on that because I think sometimes coaches can get particularly attached to, you know, what is the client going to do in the 2 weeks between our sessions or in the time between our sessions? And should I be giving them homework? And, boy, my client's a puddle of tears, so how do I transition them to, like, so what do you want to work on kind of a thing? So just wanted the panel to be able to speak to how do you know when to coach towards action? And if it's not action, then what do you typically find it is?
Great question. I think one of the key things, especially when using some of the tools you just talked about, the metaphor tool and what we call access tools, is to really, for me, listening to what emotion is coming up for the client. And when we're asking them to describe it in three adjectives, what is the tone of those adjectives? And if the tone is, you know, despair or grief or, you know, a lot about frustration and struggle, then there's a lot to be said for allowing them to be okay feeling those feelings, and particularly with grief. And some of the things that we do in coaching will unearth things that have been seemingly dormant, and that's not a good time to move into action. So one of the best assignments, if that is happening, is to use the word allow, to allow yourself to feel what you're feeling, and then just for the next couple of weeks, notice examples in your environment that supports that, or notice that, you know, you do have support out there, or notice how you're feeling differently as you allow yourself to feel. So let me give an example. I was doing a metaphor tool with someone, and the person had all these different things that they were doing as they were, you know, working towards a goal, but they were sort of one foot still teaching at a college, another foot was in learning a new craft, and then another one, yet another one was writing. And, you know, in my mind, I was thinking of the different scenarios metaphorically that that could be. And, you know, if the client said it's like having these plates spinning up on, you know, these poles, and I'm having to be down here spinning the plates, that would sound more like struggle and frustration and fear of everything crashing, versus another example would be, you know, it's like a garden where all these different things are growing, and I only have a little place for them to grow in, so I'm having to really pay attention to how they're organized and how they're going to grow and grow into each other or overshadow each other or not. That's a lot more creative space. And so, you know, moving into action for that second scenario was a smooth and easy and a flow, whereas for the first one, you know, the feeling of being worried that everything's going to come crashing down is a whole different feeling. And so staying with that feeling and helping somebody move through that and really take some turtle steps to create a little bit of relief for just the feeling first before you move into action of, you know, taking a walk down which of the plates could actually be brought down without it breaking. I don't know if that's making any sense. But
I think
to me,
I just was going to paraphrase it back, Amy, and I think what I hear you saying is that there will be times when you're coaching where whatever feeling state the client arrives with is so big that the value in the coaching session at that point is really in helping them notice what that is and making it slightly more flexible in terms of other ways to look at it to shift the feeling. And then when you can shift the feeling, when they really can shift the feeling over time, then they can move into action more creatively and proactively than if you were to try to get them there when they're feeling something as large as, you know, this impending disaster of all the plates coming down, crashing around them.
Yeah. So in my mind, you know, if I could categorize it, on one hand, is this an opportunity for allow and receive, or is this an opportunity for do? You know, something to do. So that's how I separate it in my mind in terms of what I'm listening for with the client.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, and this is a total right ball for you, I'm wondering on behalf of our cadets who are listening, when you are doing coaching by phone, when you're not in the room with them and you're listening, what else are you using besides your ears? Is there any to hear the emotion in your client's voice? Is there anything you do with your body? Is there any visualization you do? Is there any kind of process you go through to really try to connect with what they are experiencing?
Well, this is where, you know, intuition, I think, is really important. And the process of getting ready for any client session, which starts with really being present and, you know, clearing the desk, clearing, you know, not having the computer on, let's say, in front of you for any distractions. So for me, being really present, tapping into the intuition, and then really being curious and asking the open-ended questions that will help me understand it from their point of view. So to me, that's the description of empathy, is can I reflect back accurately the state that they're trying to describe to me or the situation that they're going through. So my questions are really coming from curiosity to help me understand, and my hunches are coming from, you know, sort of my attempt to get closer to what it is that they are feeling. So, like, using the metaphor tools are great. You know, can you Can you describe what it is like? Well, it's like a ball and chain. Well, that gives me a really accurate idea of how heavy this might be for the person. The three adjectives to describe what it is that they, you know, how they would describe that to me, and then reflecting that back so that I am in a much more empathy state in order to move into those questions. Is this an allow and receive and support and noticing, or is this, you know, giving me enough information to assist them in creating steps to move out of it?
What they're moving toward. Great, thanks. Chris, what would you add to Renee's comments on this question about coaching towards action or staying with feeling?
Well, I think Renee covered a lot of the ground that I would have, you know, trod had I been asked first. But beyond that, I think just sort of a shorthand way for me is depends on how new this situation feels. So if I'm talking to a client for the first time, and I don't mean a new client, I mean a client who is bringing something up for the first time, in other words, it's not sort of a continuation on of a theme, I'm more inclined to be very slow at that point rather than let's move toward action. So my inclination is always to just sit with something, be present, slow down, because so often people just want to act and do and get out of the feeling state, and you know, because it's not pleasant, and move forward. And to Renee's point, I want them to notice. I want them to honor the feelings, and then we'll worry about what to do next. So more often than not, if this is something that's relatively new in what we've discussed, I'll take it slowly. On the other hand, if this feels like, you know, and you know, sometimes I'll even go back to good old Colby. If I've got a client who's a fact finder and their inclination is to act, and I'm sensing that there's an emotion there that might need some attention, I might ask them to do nothing. You know, I might go just a little bit counter to their style. You know, but it's really, I mean, the way I'm describing it is so intellectual, and it really, to Renee's point, it's very intuitive. Very intuitive. It's what wants to happen here. And the more present I can be in that moment for what is transpiring in that client, the more I'll know.
Yeah. That is right on it. Researcher Pamela Peek out of Harvard wrote something in one of her books that I really liked, which was her specialty is addiction, but what she wrote was, never underestimate human beings' lack of tolerance for discomfort. And
yeah.
I thought that was so true. Like when you think about even a room being 1 or 2 degrees off in temperature, people describe being cold or too hot, and it's just 1 or 2 degrees, but it's enough to make them uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So that is
that.
Really, really key. Awesome. All right, so we don't lose too much time. We are going to be talking specifically about three coaching techniques, the turtle steps, the three Bs, and finding the feeling. Before we go there, I wanted to just kind of have the group weigh in, starting with Michael, on these coaching techniques are action-oriented. And so just from like a principle point of view, a technique point of view, Michael, what do you see that these tools do that's different than, say, for example, ideal day or metaphor?
Yeah. Well, certainly one of the first things they do is they make change and growth manageable by prioritizing. You know, you have to, so if there's a goal that you want to achieve and take action towards, very often it's really unclear what those steps are, even if it seems simple. And a really clear example I can give is, I work with teachers a lot, and when I talk to them about how they teach their students a new skill, they often aren't conscious of the steps that they teach between that actual, the achievement of that skill and starting it. And the example I often give is pushing in your chair. And I say, how do you push in your chair? How do you teach that? And they go, well, you just push in the chair. And they say, well, I want you to start from sitting, stand up, and then push your chair in, and then notice all the steps that you take to actually push in your chair. And there's at least four or five. And if you're someone like a child, who, let's say, and that example's not a great one, but coming, learning to push in their chair, they've never done it before, you have to be able to name what those steps are. Otherwise, you get overwhelmed. So by getting clear on what turtle steps and turtle steps are that you can take towards action are, you have to prioritize and order them. And the benefit of doing that is that, like, besides being achievable, I see it kind of acts like a fail-safe. So you take the first two or three, four steps even, and you find out, holy cow, I've got another 20 steps ahead of me, and I've already learned in these first three or four steps that this doesn't feel like I thought it would feel. And so maybe that's not the thing that you really want to create, so you can look at it from that point. And you can also recognize when you're in and out of the actual feeling state, the thing that you hope, whatever it is you're going to create, the feeling that's going to come from having achieved that thing. So the turtle steps, 3Bs, they're all things to put it back into, I guess I should say, put that the feeling state in front of us as we move mm-hmm. towards our goal.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Does that make sense?
That's great. Yeah, it's great.
And also,
it also speaks to, like, even your example. I think the example of pushing the chair in is a wonderful example because it shows how something that you can so take for granted actually has a lot of wiggle room in it, right? There's, like, at least four different places in there where you could choose to do something differently and potentially impact your result.
Absolutely.
So I love that. Renee, what would you add to Michael's description?
Great description. I love it. I think the other piece I would add is about the, these are all things that we do that can help a client stay in the game, in the midst of, you know, while it gets hard. So, and there's anxiety that rises as we're working towards our goals and our client is, you know, going through the steps and the motions. So we can help lower anxiety. We can help them with stamina to stay the course. And we can also normalize the journey, meaning, you know, this is harder than you thought. And that's, we know that about square three. So it helps to make it a little bit more normal. And I think, you know, for coaches that are sort of helper caregiver types, the way that I keep myself in line during this part of the journey is kind of like Michael's example of breaking it down into steps. If I have a client who wants to run a marathon, they need probably at least 6 months of working up to that. And my job is to help them with tools and support and all of that along the journey as they're getting their body, their muscles, their stamina, their lungs, all of that is getting ready. They can't run a 26-mile run tomorrow. They're going to have to work up to that, and I can't do it for them. So whatever ideas or suggestions we come up with turtle steps, they still have to do it because it's their body, it's their dream, it's their goal. So, you know, that really helps keep me out of the fix-it mode of, you know, trying to provide solutions. It's got to be solutions that they are coming up with and they're going to be comfortable with that provides the stamina and keeping them on the course.
Yeah. You guys, this is so good. Truly, right on it. All right, so let's go let's talk about the techniques so the cadets can really get a sense of what that is. So we'll start with the 3Bs. And Chris, maybe you could talk a little bit. Now, we know that it's outlined in their binders, but maybe you could just give a quick synopsis of what it is and then just give an example of a client scenario where you've used it.
Sure. The 3Bs, simply put, are bag it, barter it, and better it. And so what do we mean by those Bs and how do we use them? Well, the 3Bs get used when a client is perhaps feeling overwhelmed, feeling stuck, paralyzed, those sorts of things, has a task that feels too big, too undesirable, or whatever. Very useful in square three for all the reasons we've been talking about. So here's an example. I have had a client who was a professor at an Ivy League university, and she wanted very much to leave the university setting and go do policy work in Washington, D.C. And she was coming towards the end of the school year, and she was about to make a great shift in her career, but she kept getting stuck with all of the end-of-year stuff that was going on, and without completing some of that, she wouldn't be able to end her time at the university. And she was just paralyzed about grading students' papers, absolutely paralyzed. She said, I'm overdue. The dean is yelling at me. I'm holding up people's grades. That could affect, you know, their registration for next semester and so on. So it really was becoming quite a big deal. She'd let it go or stalled on it for a long time. So here we were, and I said, well, let's attempt the three Bs. So I asked her, is this something you can beg? Can you just decide not to do this? And the answer was no. This is not something I can just take off my list. It's one of my responsibilities as, you know, as a professor, and it's something that I need and want to do. So the second thing I asked was, can you barter it? Is this something where you could have somebody else grade these papers in exchange for doing something else for them, whatever that, you know, equally more desirable or easy for you to accomplish activity could be, so that they could take this on for you and they would not find it as difficult to do as you seem to be? And she said, not really, since I was their instructor and even the guest instructors, I guess I could. We sort of explored that a little, and she said, well, no, they only saw some of the students in action in some of the classes. Really, it's up to me. So for pragmatic reasons, we decided that barter wasn't going to work. So what was left in this particular case was better it. And so she, you know, the first thing she said to me was, I don't see how we can better this or I would have already done it. So we had ourselves a good laugh about that. And I said, well, okay, let's go really small. So we sort of turtle stepped the bettering it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, and I also sort of pulled in some ideas of how we could reward her or help her create some milestones that would feel like rewards to her and then actually take some actions that way. So here's what we did. So I asked her how many papers she had to grade, and she had 10. And we had our session on a Thursday. I remember that very clearly because she said, by Monday morning at 9, I have to have this finished. I've committed to doing it, and I've missed so many deadlines. I don't want to miss another one. So we had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to grade papers. So I asked her, how many papers do you have? And I'm fuzzy on the number, but for the purposes of this exercise, I'll say it was 12 because it's easily divisible by 3. And I think it was like 12 to 15. I don't remember exactly, but we'll call it 12. So I said, okay, so let's talk about the chunks of time that you have available to you over the course of this time. And then we did that. And then I said, what feels doable in a single sit-down session? What would feel like, you know, a manageable thing? She said, I said, are these papers 20 pages long or are they, you know, 3? And said, no, I would read one. And I, you know, so we talked about how long that paper would take to read typically and that kind of thing, how much time would be involved in writing, providing commentary and feedback. And so I said, when would you commit to doing one? And so we talked about that. And then, so that, you see, some of this is a little bit, I'm sort of overlapping a little in the turtle step area here.
Mm-hmm.
But what then came was, now we know when you're going to do it. We know about how long you're going to take to do each one. We know what feels manageable in the way of a step that you'll actually take. Now how do we make it comfortable or more comfortable than it currently is so that you'll do it? And what she said was, you know, I said, just start thinking about ways that would make your environment more pleasant. Where do you do this? So she said, well, I do it at my desk. And background that I knew well at that point was that she had lots and lots of clutter on her desk, and her desk was a source of tremendous overwhelm and calendars and emails and distractions. So I said, tell me where your favorite chair is. And she told me about it, and I said, would you be willing to bring one paper and a pen and, you know, a clipboard or a notepad or something to lean that paper on, would you be willing to go sit in your favorite chair? And she said, oh, my gosh, that never occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so How about you sit in your favorite chair, and why don't we even up the ante and get really crazy here and let you have your favorite beverage that's not a glass of wine, because we giggled about that. And so she said, you know, I'm going to make myself a cup of tea, I'm going to play some classical music, and I'm going to read this paper in my favorite chair.
Mm-hmm.
And that became just one example of what we did. And then there were others. So, you know, I'll speed this up for the sake of this particular recording, but we did things like say, okay, and when you grade your second paper, what's something that you could do after you grade it? Well, I could go outside and take a walk with the dog and spend 15, 20 minutes just getting out with the dog and walking and moving my body so I'm not sitting all day. And another thing we came up with was, you know what, maybe I'll download some lovely music from iTunes. You know, maybe it'll be a song, maybe it'll be an album, I don't know, but I'll add some music. And then we started to go a little into 4-day win. You know, we said, okay, so let's say you said you do 4-day, 4 papers. Why don't we just say, what is a reward for having gotten through that? What would be some way that it would feel better to have done that? And she said, I would call a friend that I've been meaning to call for a long time and have a chat for half an hour. And so the bettering sort of, it was a little bit of turtle stepping, it was a little bit of 4-day winning, but mostly what it really was how can we make this better? She was complaining about her office, she was complaining about her, you know, the stuff around her, she was complaining about how big the task was, and it was all about just making it feel a little bit more manageable, making it feel a little bit more inviting, and changing up the scenery.
So you just, I mean, that was an amazing description, because what it really demonstrated was how you could go from one tool and segue into many other ones, right?
Absolutely.
So, for example, you started with 3 B's. When she arrived at the Better It as the sort of point of entry for the strategies, then you could go to find the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, in terms of the favorite chair, and you could go to turtle steps in terms of breaking it down to make it even easier, you know, so you can really begin to see how something like that can become a wraparound. It's not a linear, use
mm-hmm.
this tool, use this tool, use this tool. It's like, okay, so given where the client is right now and where we're heading, what have I got in my toolbox that would be useful?
Yeah, because Better is, it covers a lot of ground.
Sure it does.
You know? Better covers
yeah.
the mindset, better covers a task list, better cover, you know, there's a lot of pieces in there. So, yeah, you
uh-huh.
just pull out what you need. And I think, you know, we've been saying this to the cadets throughout Coach the Coach, hopefully, is take the tools and make them your own. Be present, as we've been talking about. In that moment, you start to see, how do I just imagine different ways that this could work? And, you know, even one of the other things that we did, I said, what's the reward for getting all the papers done? And she said, there's this floor cushion that I, she answered immediately, there's this floor cushion that I saw at Pottery Barn that's like $50, and I didn't want to spend the money, but I think it would be really cool to sit on the floor of my office for a change sometimes and lean up against it and have the music playing. And I thought, well, hell yeah, do that. And so I remember she emailed me a picture of her floor cushion after she graded the papers. So, and that felt really victorious to her that she'd done that.
Yeah. Yep. The other thing I liked about your example is that you helped her. Like, I think sometimes as coaches, we think that we can never, you know, it's always up to the client to kind of come up with the idea. And I liked the way you described kind of helping her with this idea of even the favorite chair. And then from there, she could be off and running.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good example. So on the next one, we were talking about turtle steps. I really don't have to say too much here because I think you've given a great example of it. So I'll just give a short example of a client scenario. I had a corporate client call me and say that, you know, they thought that they were ready to transition out of their current job where they've been for quite some time with a very big company. And over the course of the call, they self-described that they were ready to make this transition. And so I asked them, you know, what do you think you could do in the next 48 hours that could help you move closer to that desired state you're going for, this feeling of they wanted calm, centered, liberated, valued. And their first response was, I could identify 12 companies I would want to have an interview with. And my first response internally, right, is, that's not a turtle step. That's actually quite a huge step. And the likely outcome of leaving a call with that is that the person wouldn't do anything because they wouldn't necessarily know where to get started. And it sounds like in the one way you say, 12 companies I'd love to interview with, sounds like a great outcome for somebody who's thinking about transitioning. But it's much bigger than that. The emotional resistance to it is much bigger. What does it mean for me to actually start identifying companies I want an interview with? And then the internal narrative starts, what would I say? Am I ready for an interview? Is my resume ready? Do I use a search form? And all those kinds of things get in the way. So I was able to say, and it was, this was even in the very first session, like we weren't even very far underway. We had a previous working relationship, so it wasn't like I was talking to a stranger, but it had been some time. And so I was able to say, that sounds like a big step. Like that sounds like where you may want to end up as we move through coaching. If I were to say, what could you do in the next 2 days that would seem so easy that it would be ridiculous for you not to do it? And what they came up with was they could make a list of adjectives for the kinds of companies they think they'd like to work with next. And that was literally something they could brainstorm, at the kitchen counter in the morning while they're having their cup of coffee, and that felt very easy to them and very rewarding. Now, of course, the reality is that they may do that in 2 days after the call and then in another 10 days between that and the next coaching conversation, they've moved on, right? They've taken those adjectives and said, Gretchen, like I found this great article and there were 3 organizations in there that fit that list of adjectives exactly, and I didn't even realize I'd be finding something so close to what I was looking for. And that's exactly the kind of movement that I love to see with my clients, is that they make a commitment to themselves out loud on the phone with me to witness it, to do something that just feels so easy to them. And, of course, what it does is set things in motion. So rather than try to make something happen, it's really just about setting something in motion. So that's really what I would say about turtle steps, is that it's about having a couple of different ways to go after something and then making whatever it is you're going to do next just so simple and so easy. It's not the complexity of the task, it's the emotional complexity of the task that I think needs to be small.
I think there's a really important point in here, Gretchen, that you talked to and that Michael spoke to earlier, and that is these tools are very much about being deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, instead of taking for granted that you know the attributes of a company you might want to work for, or that you know how you're going to grade a paper and it's going to be at your desk covered with crap. It's about slowing down, noticing, being deliberate, being present, and not taking something for granted.
Yeah, or just doing it by reflex because it's the way you've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
Really great observations. So then that takes us to the third tool, which is find the feeling. And Michael, we thought we would start with you on that one. What would you say about find the feeling when if you used it?
Since I saw the question and I've been thinking about it, I without a doubt use it every single time I work with a client, and I probably use it in an hour-long session 5 or more times. I mean, it is always present, and it may not be true for every coach or everyone, but I use it a lot. And what would I say about it? Well, the way I use it is often, a client has, I always start my coaching calls with intentions. Like I want to know what they want to get out of a session, or if it's a workshop, I want to know, what is it that you hope to achieve? And often the description, the intention is a description of an action or something that can almost physically be seen. And that's where I always follow up the intention question with, what's your motivation for that intention? And I also call that, what's the intention behind your intention?
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that I want to know what it is you hope to feel as a result of having fulfilled that intention, of it coming to be. And it's funny because often clients will tell me what they want for someone else. And I always bring it back. So when I say, what's your motivation, or I want to know what is the feeling that you want to feel, I say that you want for yourself. Even if you hope that, you know, this will bring your family more of whatever, I want to know, well, what will that do for you if your family gets that thing? So I always bring it first back to the client and what they hope or believe they will feel as a result of fulfilling their intention. And very often just that act of asking them that helps them get clear on whether or not the intention they thought they wanted is what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes just naming that, well, I hope I'm going to feel this, they realize, well, I actually don't need to create that type of change to have that because I already have it here. Or there's no way that that thing is going to bring me the feeling state that I'm looking for. I didn't even realize that what I was looking for was happiness, and I was about to try to fulfill that by buying, you know, a great big new house, and that would have actually created a lot more stress, the exact opposite of what I wanted.
Right.
So I want to give you like a quick story that'll make this a little more concrete and a little less wordy. I do a lot of hands-on workshops, and a couple of years ago I did a workshop, a coaching workshop, but it was on rustic furniture building. It was how to build like a rustic chair, and it was a parent-child workshop. And there was a father-son couple that were there, and they were working on this chair. And I came over and I had asked them both, you know, what's your intention? And the kid, who was like 13, 14, spoke. And then I asked the dad, well, what's your intention? And he goes, well, we want to create a chair, and I want to do it with my son. And you know, he gave a couple vague general details. And I said, well, what's your motivation for that? And he goes, well, you know, this is something my son wanted to do, and I'm willing to just, you know, do things that he wants to do. And, like, he couldn't touch what he really wanted, so I kind of pushed a little bit further, and I was like, well, what is it that you want for you? And he's like, I don't want anything for me.
Mm.
And the son turned to him and goes, that's the problem, Dad. You never tell me or want what you want for you, and you always just give that up. And that's not what I want. And it was like this great big aha. I mean, the dad was revealing that he was making choices in this relationship between him and his son that – weren't really getting him the results he was looking for because he couldn't even acknowledge the feeling state that he wanted for himself. And as I talked to him further privately, it was clear to me that he thought I want love. I want to feel love, and I want to be able to give love. His belief was, as a father, I shouldn't want things for myself. It's just what I can give. I don't believe that. I believe that anything that we're moving towards, there is something in it for us, and it's a feeling state. And more often than not, it's some kind of joyful feeling state. It's certainly a good feeling state. And by tracking what it is that you hope to feel for you, even if it's when you want to do something for someone else, you want your girlfriend or your boyfriend, your husband or wife, or whatever, your kids, to have a joyful experience, the question is, what will you have? What will you feel as a result of them having a joyful experience? Oh, I'll feel joyful, right? And that's where they have to start from. So what is it then that you can do right now that's going to make you in that joyful feeling state so that you can create the thing that you want? Because if you're not creating the thing that you want from that joyful or whatever you want to free feeling state, it's going to take a lot longer to get there. And you might actually find, if you can start from the feeling state that you want, that you're already there. And you'll find that creating the thing that you want isn't what you want, or the process, the journey of creating it, will be just as joyful as if you had it and when you actually get it. So sometimes just kind of laying out that story helps clients a lot. And like I said, with every interaction, with every turtle step, with every tool, acknowledging and finding and naming that feeling. I mean, that's another way of looking at it is, where are you on the body compass? Are you aligned? How far away are you from it? What can we do to get you closer to it? Because the end result is you know, a part of what we try to help our clients get to. But if they're not getting to it from the place and feeling state that they are hoping they're going to feel when they get there, they just may never get there. Holy cow, that was a lot. Does that give
well,
you a little
luckily
feedback?
It's on the recording, so I have an opportunity to go back and re-listen to it. But I think the point in all of this is that to find and notice the feeling, which sounds easier than it actually is. Many of our clients, when they come to us, are either numb to whatever they're feeling, or they have been living in negative emotion for so long that finding the positive feeling and moving towards that is a totally unique proposition for them.
Yeah.
So I think, Michael, you've done a great job of describing what it can look like when you're working with a client who's not even tapped into that, right? They're not even connected to what it is they want. And so if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And so one of the things we can do when we're helping them find that feeling is notice what they're feeling, how close is it or far away from what it is you want to be feeling, and then what are the choices you want to make to start moving closer. And one of the things I really liked about your story is you can use it as a coaching technique on big things. You can also quite literally use it in the middle of the day. You know, if you kind of notice you're off a little bit, ask yourself, top notice, what is it I'm feeling? Is it what I want to be feeling? And if not, how can I move closer to where I want to be?
Yeah. And then, you know, while Chris was talking, I was thinking, too, you lay out your turtle steps. Like, you know, okay, there's this, and then there's this, and then there's this. You can use that feeling state to recognize which of those steps feel the best. And
right.
If any of them feel less than good, that's where you can throw in the three Bs. Like, so
yep.
These three things just are in super combination with one another.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that super combination, like the awesome coaching software package.
That's my 3-year-old's new word is super, so I'm finding that I'm using it all the time now, too.
Yeah,
that's so
super. Okay, so we're going to segue now. Thank you, Michael, for that awesome description to find the feeling. And we're going to move into our wrap-up. We're going to each offer up some closing words. We're going to start with Renee on this idea or the concept of backward living. And then we're also going to each chime in with our highest hopes for the feeling states that each of you cadets listening to this recording will be able to connect to, tap into as you move into this fourth class of your Coach the Coach practicum. So, Renee, why don't you start us off?
Okay, thank you. I think the concept of backward living is really a beautiful segue that Michael just created about the idea of being able to create that feeling state and then know what that is. And that, I think, really helps with another piece in square three, which is letting go of attachment to the outcome. Because it's the feeling state that we're after, not necessarily the thing that we're trying to do, which is why during square three it can change. And a great example, I think, for this is like in the round pin when we're doing Equus coaching and the person's done a really nice sort of conversation with the horse and then it's time for the horse to come up and sort of connect with you and then you take your walk. That's a moment in time where it's a trap for, oh no, this isn't going to happen. You know, the horse isn't going to come up to me. And the minute we're in our head, that feeling state of fear and confusion is going to really go out to the horse, and the horse is going to stand there and look. And so tapping into what would it feel like to have that horse come up and take a walk with you, that creates all this energy in the field so that the horse connects to the energy state and will come right up and walk to you. And if that doesn't happen, then that feeling that you want to have with connection with the horse, you can change your plan and actually go over to the horse, give him a little rub, reward him for reading all of the other signs correctly, and now you have that connection. So the statement that Martha makes is really important. External circumstances do not create feeling states. Feeling states create the external circumstances. So if we can imagine what it will feel like and then move backwards into our planning and our steps to get there, it's really the most valuable way to get there. And for cadets moving into your coaching practice, it's a beautiful way to start. If you're creating a telecourse, the question is, how do I want to feel at the end of the course, and how do I want my participants to feel? And then you can move backwards into planning. And you have so many options for the tools that you can use in your telecourse or in your coaching. And I think for me, that's the feeling state that I would wish for cadets and for all of us, is to realize, number one, that we have lots of options because of the beautiful tools that we're learning with the Martha Beck program. And there are certain ways that they're taught, but we can really make them our own and use our intuition. And, you know, Michael and Chris and Gretchen and I could listen to a client situation, and each of us might choose a different tool, and it would all be valuable for the client. So those options, I think, are really important, and just trusting what option comes to you in the present moment with your clients. So that's my piece.
Lovely. And she'll pass the talking stone to Michael.
I think mine is sitting right next to what Renee is saying. And I have been working with this a lot myself lately. My want or intention would be for others to walk away with a deep sense of presence and experience a full state of being, just being and then trusting that. And what I mean by that is that if you can just be present with someone else in front of you, sharing what's going on for them, and trust your instinct and pay attention, you will know exactly what you need to do. And I do know that in the process of learning all of these tools, there is a hero's saga in learning them. We fumble with certain parts, and we, you know, didn't do that word exactly right. But the truth is, it when you're present, it's all exactly right. And one of the better examples I think I can give is I've done a few workshops with Martha where we've co-facilitated things. And I used to get to a place where I just had no words. I didn't know what to say. And that for a while bothered me. I'd be like, Martha, sometimes we're sitting there and I don't know what to tell people. I don't know what to say, and I'm struggling to find the tool or the word. And she's like, maybe you could trust the silence, because maybe that's what needs to happen. And I just started noticing that and becoming more and more comfortable with it, and then asking for feedback later on with situations where I didn't have words or where I said something that I judged myself for. And more I started to find that when I was just there and present and trusted whatever came out, the feedback that I continually get is, that's exactly what was needed in the moment. And so, that's what I would want for everybody who's going through this, to get to that place of presence and trusting and faith in the whole bigger picture. Because if not this, then it's working for something even greater. I really do believe that. Well, that's it.
Great. And then pass the stone to Chris.
Amen, Sister Renee and Brother Michael.
And you.
What I would say, just to build on that, is I think so often what cadets want is confidence, and they feel that they don't have confidence, and they, if they just have one more tool, or if they just listen to one more recording, or read one more page in the binder, or listen to one more master coach, that they'll know what they need to know. And I think what Renee and Michael have said so beautifully, and what I'd like to sort of piggyback on, is you already know. You already have all the tools because you have you. And your intuition, your guidance, doing your own work to become present, doing your own work to let go and trust that if you don't hold on too tightly to the how of it and just be with it, whether that's your own emotions, whether it's what's going on in a client session, all is it's a gift. It's all there. You've got it. You know what you know, and everything you need will come to you in the time it's meant to, for you and for your clients.
I love it. And I would just, my closing thoughts is that I think all people, no matter where they are in their life or what path they're walking, need to grow is a source of hope and inspiration and the opportunities to stretch themselves. And I think each coach is that for their clients. And I would wish for each of the cadets, as they are listening to this recording and preparing for their last class with CTC3 anyway, that they're feeling that hope and inspiration and really stretching themselves. And so with that, we're all in.